ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
We feel very fortunate to be back here, and that each time we come here, we feel especially encouraged by seeing how, against all odds, sincere devotees hold the line against Maya, who's constantly attacking and who has unlimited resources. And that those who are sincere develop real knowledge, which means to know that Krishna and his name are non-different, and that all you really have to do is chant Hare Krishna in order to not only be happy, but also attain the goal of life, which includes not falling into Maya. So thank you very much for all that you're doing to help yourselves and help the whole world by strictly following in the footsteps of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who is unusually empowered by Lord Chaitanya, with the standards of all the acharyas who have appeared in the world. Srila Prabhupada is a shining light, and somehow we're fortunate enough to be here at the same time that he has appeared. And when I say same time, even those who weren't here a few years ago when he was just walking on this floor, the very floor you're sitting on, I think, unless he changed it once. In geological time, he was only here a couple minutes ago. And his message and the influence that he had is as strong as it ever was, and available as it ever was to anyone who sincerely wants to inquire about how to solve all the problems of life and how to do good for others and many other such noble questions. So this temple stands as a beacon for the rest of the world. I hear about it wherever I go. Devotees mention the Denver temple. And sometimes when you're in a place, you're not able to appreciate it as much as when you're not in a place. Sometimes from afar, it's easier to appreciate what you have. When you're in the midst of it, oftentimes what you see is the daily struggle to remain Krishna conscious and to cooperate and other such very difficult things to do. However, the effort that you take to do this is an investment which does not go unnoticed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In fact, those who dedicate their lives to the process to the best of their ability throughout this lifetime, however imperfectly they may perform it, will be honored by the Lord, are honored by the Lord as great sadhus. Apichet sudra charo bhajate mam ananyabhak sadhureva samantabhya samyag vyavasito hi saha. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that those who are trying to be Krishna conscious, even though they're doing it imperfectly, are to be known as sadhus. Those who are noteworthy human beings. And humans are already dear to Krishna. He says so in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. What to speak of those humans who have turned their attention towards him and the process of devotional service. So I thank you all very much for doing what you're doing. Not one moment of the service that you're doing will go in vain. The trouble it takes to haul a huge bag of chickpeas downstairs, the time it takes to counsel another devotee and listen to others vent as they're trying against all odds to go on with the practice of Krishna consciousness, organizing the jewelry, going out in the streets and meeting people and intervening in their lives, even though they didn't ask you to. That's what an intervention is, generally. All that is counted and recorded. Whatever living entity does is counted and recorded, especially in the human form of life. And the very act of being a Gush Dinlandi means you have to live in a community for the sake of developing a habitat where other people can come in and take shelter of the process of Krishna consciousness. But I've seen in my lifetime the devotees who may have been simple but were sincere and simply continued the process as it was set down by Srila Prabhupada and have had unusual success and arguably have gone back to Godhead when they left this world, or at least are a major step towards it. And going back to Godhead is a process, not necessarily an event. So, thank you very much. Hare Krishna. So, I'm going to read a couple of verses from Bhagavad Gita. And one is never disappointed by doing such a thing. Although the mind may try to convince us that there are other things better to do. There is nothing better for the mind to do but read Bhagavad Gita. And I'm taking up at chapter 2, contents of the Gita summarized at text number 62. And this verse, which many of you already know, reads like this. And if you like, those of you who know it can repeat after me. Jayato Vishayan Pungsa. Sangasteshu Pajayate. Sangat Sanjayate Kama. Kamat Krodho Pajayate. Now I'll say each word and then what it means. And you can repeat if you like. Jayataha. While contemplating. Vishayan. Sense objects. Punksaha. Of a person. Sangha. Attachment. Teshu. In the sense objects. Upajayate. Develops. Sangat. From attachment. Sanjayate. Develops. Kamaha. Desire. Kamat. From desire. Krodaha. Anger. Abhijayate. Becomes manifest. Translation. While contemplating the objects of the senses, a person develops attachment for them, and from such attachment, lust develops, and from lust, anger arises. Srila Prabhupada's purport. One who is not Krishna conscious is subjected to material desires while contemplating the objects of the senses. One who is not Krishna conscious is subjected to material desires while contemplating the objects of the senses. The senses require real engagements, and if they are not engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, they will certainly seek engagement in the service of materialism. The senses require real engagements, and if they are not engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, they will certainly seek engagement in the service of materialism. In the material world, everyone, including Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, to say nothing of other demigods in the heavenly planets, is subjected to the influence of sense objects, and the only method to get out of this puzzle of material existence is to become Krishna conscious. Lord Shiva was deep in meditation, but when Parvati agitated him for sense pleasure, he agreed to the proposal, and as a result, Kartikeya was born. When Haridas Thakur was a young devotee of the Lord, he was similarly allured by the incarnation of Maya Devi, but Haridas easily passed the test because of his unalloyed devotion toward Krishna. As illustrated in the above-mentioned verse of Sri Yamunacharya, a sincere devotee of the Lord shuns all material sense enjoyment due to his higher taste for spiritual enjoyment in the association of the Lord. That is the secret of success. One who is not therefore in Krishna consciousness, however powerful he may be in controlling the senses by artificial repression, is sure to ultimately fail, for the slightest thought of sense pleasure will agitate him to gratify his desires. So in the first sentence, Prabhupada says that one who is not Krishna conscious is subjected to material desires while contemplating the objects of the senses, which is an interesting statement, because there's a way in which one has to contemplate objects within this world. Obviously, they're objects of the senses because the senses are observing them. So there's two ways of doing that. One way is under the duress of material desires, and that means that when contemplating the objects of the senses, one can develop an unnatural desire for them. And I say unnatural because Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes in his Harinam Chintamani the weakness of heart, which causes one to stay in the material world, is symptomized by being attracted to trifling things. And compared to the quality of energy that is the consciousness of each living being, everything in the material world is trifling. Everything's a trifle. The whole material world's a trifle. In fact, in the Kevala Namashtakam, the anonymous devotee who wrote that, writes how it is that a person who has experienced the grandeur and pleasure of chanting the holy name of the Lord considers the entire material world to be insignificant. He sees it the way Brahma may see a little ant. There's nothing to the material world ultimately for those whose minds have become attracted to the spiritual world. However, this idea, jayato vishayam pumsang, when one sees the objects and senses, if one hasn't developed an attachment for the higher energy, that is, the energy of a Krishna's internal potency, then it's natural that one will develop a sangha, or a relationship with the objects of the senses in the material world. And so, one of the ways in which one can be attentive or progressive in one's spiritual life is to notice where one's attention is going. As an old saying goes, where attention goes, energy flows. And we project ourselves into the material world by giving it our attention. However, by noticing where we put our attention, this is called the practice of yoga, by deliberately pointing our attention towards the higher quality of object, then we can actually increase our own consciousness. When I look about the material world without any training for the mind, it's natural that I'll see various things that attract my attention. And Krishna says, don't do this. In the Bhagavad Gita, he mentions that the person who's not fixed on a higher object of meditation will naturally be diverted into what he calls bahu shaka hi anantas cha, which means that unlimited places to place his or her attention in the material world. Bahu shaka means intelligence will become many branched, have many directions to run. As the old saying goes, if you try to chase two rabbits at the same time, you'll end up getting neither of them. And so yoga means to determine through hearing from the authoritative sources, especially the Vedas and especially the Srimad Bhagavatam, what is the ultimate object on which one can place one's attention, and then very deliberately bringing one's attention back to that supreme object, which happens to be Krishna. It's in our line of teachers, the Goswamis, who are direct disciples of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, They have brought out this verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Ete Chamsha Kala Pumsa, Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam, Indrari Vyakulam Lokam, Ridayantu Yuge Yuge. That of all the incarnations of the Lord, that the source is Krishna, and he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Krishna himself says in the Bhagavad Gita that if you make me the object of your attention, then you're known as a person who knows everything, because you know the source of everything, and you also know the purpose of your life. And when one then deliberately focuses one's attention on Krishna, then one feels properly aligned. And the best way to do that is by developing a service mind. And that means that I think of ways in which to serve Krishna. So bhakti is very practical in that way, because first of all, we have deity worship. And when devotees learn to come and see the deity, this is a kind of service, just to show up at the temple nice and clean. You make yourself presentable, and then you come before the deity and just say, here I am. Because there's a lot of other places you could be, right? Say yes. I mean, they're all over the place. People are always looking around. When we go outside, we notice there's lots of shops and places where you can look at stuff. But here, this is a kind of service, because you're deliberately coming here and saying, Krishna, I got cleaned up, and here I am. And that's a kind of service. If somebody shows up for you, how do you feel? If they deliberately go out of their way to show up for you, and they clean themselves up, maybe bring you a flower or something like that, how do you feel? Great. So this is a kind of service. It's very practical, because we have an object we can meditate upon. There are clear descriptions of Krishna in the Bhagavatam and in other bhakti literatures. The Nectar Devotion, for instance, describes how Krishna has a pinkish hue and many a reddish hue in various places on his body. And they describe the way he wears his hair, kind of instruments he plays. He has a lot of different kinds of flutes. And devotees can become interested. If a person becomes interested in these features of the Lord, then his mind can become engaged. And then there's a practical way in which, through the Pancharatrikividhi, one simultaneously comes in contact with the Sattva-gun and also has an engaging way in which to serve the Lord. For instance, I remember when I first came to the temple and they cleaned me up. I'd say, never grow your hair like this again. I would have gotten matted before I came. I had a vow I wouldn't comb my hair or anything like that before I came, because I thought I was a yogi. And then so I shaved it off. I remember the person, Tejumai, who was shaving my hair off, and he goes, never do this again. I go, all right. But they got me cleaned up. They showed me what clean meant. I never knew. And then they put me in part of the pujari room to make flower garlands. And I remember thinking, like, now this is clean, and this is pure, and this is nice. I felt overwhelmingly sanctified by the atmosphere. The flowers, which I wasn't to smell, I was only to do a service, which I obediently did, because I was being given instruction. And then there's music playing in the background. And I feel happy and in a beautiful environment. And then there was music. And when the music came on, I remember devotees started dancing. The first devotees I saw in a kirtan, I had come to the temple, and there were some, two devotees had just taken sannyas in India. And then they had come back to San Francisco. They were going to start a traveling party. And they would have kirtan together with a few other devotees. And one of them used to jump really high in the air. He was a good jumper. And I remember watching them and seeing, when the kirtan would really get going, one of them would start jumping high in the air, and I thought, he's seeing Krishna now. And many of the sights and wonders, when I first walked in the temple, the smell of clean, what does clean smell like? And what does the incense smell like? What is the smell of flowers everywhere? Why have flowers everywhere? Not many people do until they die. Most people work hard and they deprive themselves of the actual nectar of life. I saw today when we were at a stoplight coming home from the airport, there was a man up washing down the deck on the upper part of his house. And I was thinking, I wonder what portion of life one gets to actually spend in such a house. I estimated that house. I'm a good assessor. It was $560,000. So he paid $560,000 for that house. And I wonder how many hours out of 24 he gets to spend in there actually enjoying. Most of the time he's either working or coming back to maintain the house. But just sit there and feel like, I'm enjoying this house, not very much. So there's not much engagement in the material world, but for the devotees, there's a barrage of sense enjoyment that overwhelms the senses. And if one submissively engages in service to the Lord, then the kinds of sights and sounds and smells will enchant the heart and stimulate the mind. And one will feel kind of satisfaction that immunizes one from the nasty smells and sights and sounds of the material world. Oftentimes when we go to Rath Yatra in Los Angeles, which by the special blessings of my wife, I get to go to every year because she has been at the Los Angeles Rath Yatra since it began, and she's cooked the feast for that Rath Yatra since it began. And so several years ago, she invited me to come down and help cook for it. So you got to know somebody to get in a service like that. And I've had this experience being at the Rath Yatra. And all we do is engage in service for several days, absorbed in the kitchen, on the block, in Watseka. And then after 3 days, you drive down the street to the Rath Yatra, and you see people walking around, and you think like, oh, they're still out here. What are they doing out here? Going to a liquor shop or listening to some music that has very bass kind of vibration to it and so forth. It seems such a stark contrast to the nuance and aesthetics of the spiritual world and the spiritual sounds. So keeping one's senses engaged in service to Krishna through deity worship and then through the practice of chanting the Maha Mantra, by repeating the names of Krishna and then listening to the sound and remembering what it means, that it's a prayer, that please engage me in your service. These give one this higher taste so that one is not immediately attracted to the material world. Of course, there are ways in which, as this verse describes, from contemplating the objects of the senses, one develops a sangha with them. So because of my involvement in the material world in so many lifetimes, there's a continuum of lifetimes. This is not the first time. Many, many times I've appeared in a physical, mental, and gross physical body and have engaged my senses in various ways, and therefore there's a kind of residual effect of that. So even as one's practicing bhakti, the residual effect will come back. And one will experience it. And just on the point of dhyayata or contemplation, where we place our attention, it makes a big difference. Where you place your attention, well, first of all, let me say this before I ask for reflections, and that is that all we have is our attention. We may think that we have one asset or another, but ultimately, if we reduce what we are as living beings, we are tiny units of attention. That's what a conscious living entity is. Kesha grashat bhagasha shadamsha shadrishat makaha jiva sukshma swarupa yam sankatito hi chitkana. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu quoted this verse, so I thought you'd like it. kana, we're a little particle of consciousness, and what does it do? It has an awareness. It's an aware unit of energy, which is remarkable. It's the most remarkable thing in the world, an amazing thing. And so, if we look at the essence of what we actually have, it is the choice of where to place our consciousness, where to place our attention, to be more exact. And from moment to moment, when we inflame ourselves through the hearing of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and so forth, and by chanting Hare Krishna, practicing focusing the mind on the highest objects of meditation, like Krishna, in the form of the deity and the holy names, then we can make more and more conscious decision and have the strength to do it about where to place our attention. And I would argue that it makes a big difference where we place our attention. In fact, that's everything. And this verse gives some indication of that. Dhyayato vishayan pumsa. If a human looks at sense objects with the wrong mindset, then there's a lot of trouble. You develop a sangha with them, and you don't want that. If you get a sangha with material things, then you're stuck for a while. You have to deal with it, and it's not nice for a spiritual soul to have to do that. You have to deal with it on a much higher level, the material world, by service and seeing how everything can be used for Krishna. So, just a couple of minutes ago, I'm sitting here and I'm watching all of you, and you're watching me, right, to some degree. And then somebody came in. I have no idea who it was. Did somebody come in? Yes. Thank you for filling me. But I noticed when somebody came in, a lot of you looked in that direction. And just for that, 10 seconds, I was thinking, hey, how come they're looking over there? It was a visceral experience that you were looking somewhere else. And I started to feel a little bit, I don't know what the word is, a little bit anxious. It's like, where'd you go? I was thinking, where'd you go? Hey, come back, And that's how powerful your attention is and where you place it. And so consciousness means attention. Attention is something very deliberate. I was once in San Francisco distributing books on the street. Downtowns, especially in big cities, it can be very difficult. And I was approaching people, offering them the opportunity to read the Bhagavad Gita. And not everybody was interested, but they expressed it at least. They articulated it in ways that I could appreciate. But one man who was walking down the street didn't respond at all. In fact, he pretended that I didn't exist. I mean, I can't even tell if he was pretending, because the experience was so traumatizing that he didn't. If he had spit at me, I would have been much happier. And this confirmed for me the statement of one of the Holocaust survivors who wrote quite a few philosophical and very interesting statements about life and consciousness. Said that the opposite of love is not hate, but the opposite of love is indifference. And there's a way in which when somebody's indifferent to me, I feel it more, there's more impact than if somebody expresses some anger or hatred or something like that. At least they notice me. But when there's indifference, then there's darkness. In fact, we say ignorance. But ignorance can also be pronounced ignorance. And that's what's going on with a conditioned soul who's in darkness, is ignorance. I'm ignoring myself because I'm ignoring the source of myself. And the process of Krishna consciousness means simply to reverse that process. This is brought up in a famous verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Payam dvitiya binibeshita syat ishara petasya viparyayo smriti tamaya tam buddha abhijatam tamaya tam buddha abhijatam bhaktyaisha yekam guru devatatma. It's a very precise algebraic equation. For those of you who like algebra, you'll like this verse. It says that the cause of material life is dvitiya, which means turning one's attention away from the spiritual world and looking towards the material world, and thinking that there's something separate from God, dvitiya. And from that, all kinds of inconvenient circumstances develop for the spiritual being, including a relationship with the dead material world. And then the solution comes in the next set of lines, tan maya tan buddha abhijatam. An intelligent person then will take advantage of the process of yoga, bhaktyaika yesham guru devatatma, which means that when pointedly, that person will point his or her attention towards Guru and Krishna. And by that process, then, the lights come back on again. Therefore, the admonition of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the first canto, tasmad ekena manasa bhagavan sattvatam bhati shrotavya kirtitavyascha dyeya pujascha nityada. This is Sudha Goswami saying that, therefore, one should, with one-pointed attention, worship Krishna. One should think of Krishna, one should chant Krishna's names, and perform devotional service. And by doing this, and giving one's attention to Krishna, then one will feel properly aligned, and by proper alignment, then there's harmony. And there's a sense of connectedness, and therefore peace, and proper engagement in life. So now we'll take a few reflections. Anything that you heard so far that's stuck in your mind?
I like what you said about how if we engage our senses in Krishna consciousness, then our senses won't be entangled in the gross things of the material world.
Yes, and you have to do it every day. Because what happens is that if you don't do it every day, in fact, every morning and every evening at least, then the senses will run off on their own. And when you get them back, it is unknown. They can wander off a long way and it takes a long time to get them back. So it's always best to, when one discovers what the goal of life is, to be very careful and deliberate about how one focuses one's attention. And although it may seem excessive to the materialistic mind, which says, why don't you lighten up a little bit and have some fun here in the material world, those who are sincere and have recognized the opportunity that they have in the human form of life, we'll take time morning and evening to hear, chant, and remember about Krishna. So some of the best ways to do that are by chanting Hare Krishna. This is the most highly recommended process, to chant Hare Krishna. And it's especially recommended to chant Hare Krishna and pay close attention to what you're doing while you're doing it. And miraculously, if you do that, then your life will become progressively better in all ways. Just by that one thing, if you just decide that I'm going to pay attention. Now, this is the hardest thing that you can possibly do in life. And it's the most frequently asked question. Wherever I go, I always have somebody come up to me and say, you know, it's really, really hard to control my mind. And when I chant, my mind goes all over the place and it's very difficult. On the other hand, if one simply tries to do this, if you recognize the fact that it's difficult and don't give up, and you continue trying to chant Hare Krishna, especially the japa in the morning time, by concentrating your mind and doing everything you can to overcome the whimsy of the mind and the ways in which it wants to run off to other places, then you'll gradually, over time, become the greatest of all yogis. But just by that one process of chanting Hare Krishna with great deliberation and seriousness and not giving in to the mind's demands, saying that I want to do something else. So what if you want to do something else? You've been doing something else for billions of lifetimes, and look where it got us. You're not in charge anymore. You blew it. You lost your opportunity. No more. Krishna tells Uddhava that the mind has fearsome godlike powers over the living entity, and it's for no other reason except for the mind's whimsy that I've been in the material world life after life. So enough's enough. That's the mood of serious devotee. Enough's enough. I'm going to chant Hare Krishna. And making that deliberate choice will make all the difference in the world. Yes, what else? From the Sunri. Okay. Yes.
I appreciate the point that you made. You're saying when we neglect to associate with the higher aspect of something. So I was thinking about with people, the way that we give them attention, and are we doing it in the highest aspect, seeing that higher aspect of them when we give them attention?
Yeah, well, one thing is to recognize the higher aspect really is that they're spiritual beings, and also to recognize that spiritual beings are sensitive. That may sound like maybe even a very entry-level kind of understanding, but it's very important. And I've noticed recently, because I've been thinking about this principle of attention and how it works, I have a good friend that I talk to regularly on Skype, and he has a habit of looking at his watch. It's just a habit, because he's a very regulated person, the most regulated person I know. I hope I'm not giving anything away here. So as I'm talking to him, oftentimes he just out of habit looks at his watch. And for some reason, that really irritates me. And so when he does it, I always have this reaction. I say, okay, you got to go? I got to go too. See you later. And he goes, no, stop. I didn't mean it. You know I didn't mean it. Now come back. But I think of that. If you looked at it in slow motion, then you'd see that it was only a millisecond that he turned his wrist like this and turned away. And that, what is that energy that's taking place from me to another person as we're making a conscious connection? And if I just turn it off for 1 second, what happens to what is? How does the other person feel when I turn away? On the other hand, if I give my full attention to somebody, they become very surprised, because it doesn't happen very much in this world. People generally don't give that a high quality of attention to others, because I'm thinking while the other person's talking, when are they going to leave me alone? And when they stop talking, I'm going to say something that's better than what they said. And many other various ways in which I don't give full attention to what the other person's saying. So I had experienced recently when I was in Mayapur. I was at some meetings, and they were tedious, to say the least. So I was sitting out in the area where you can get snacks and just sit there and look out into Mayapur wilderness, and thinking, you know, minding my own business. And a very enthusiastic devotee came up and sat right next to me. And then he wanted to tell me something important. And so then I was thinking, I have two choices. One, I can do, I can sort of half listen to him and look off in the distance while he's talking. And then you know, he'll kind of get an idea that maybe I listened and maybe I wasn't so interested. Or I could give my full attention. So I decided that I was going to give him my full attention. It was a conscious choice. I made it in a split second. I thought, this one or this one? I thought, it's more noble to give him attention. He's a devotee. Krishna likes all living entities. He gives them attention all the time. He's always there. Even when they go into lower species of life, he still gives them attention. So I said, this is what I should do. It's the right thing. So I turn my chair, and I gave him full attention, physically, mentally, and I just let, and he jumped. And he actually said these words. He said, no one's ever done that before. It's such a small thing. All I had to do was actually decide that I was going to give up my agenda of being tired and uninterested, and I was going to give another living entity my attention. And I turned my chair, and I dropped all the other things I was thinking about, worrying about, and I gave and I aligned myself so I was looking right at him. And you know what happened? He told me some things were very important, and then we became best friends. I mean, he became, I mean, there was such a conscious feeling connection that took place. And part of it, the doorway was open because I made that conscious choice and I turned my attention towards him. So living beings are already higher energy. It's just a matter of if I think about it. The Sri Upanishad says, Yasmin sarvani bhutani atmaivad bhut vijanataha tatrako muhukashoka ekatvam manupashyataha. One who always sees everything in relation to the Supreme Lord and sees the Supreme Lord within everything, never hates anything or any being. One who sees the Supreme, one who always sees all living entities as spiritual sparks in quality with the Lord, in one in quality with the Lord, never hates anything or any being. What then can be illusion or anxiety for him? And the word is anupashyati in the verse, which means that you should follow what the scriptures say, that these are living entities, therefore you should respect them, give them your proper attention. And if you do, then the world changes and the relationships change. It's the most basic, simple thing, but it has the most impact of anything else that we can do, and that is to give our attention to Krishna and to his devotees and to other living entities, because Krishna's in their hearts. And that's what the... that's how we elevate ourselves in this life, by being deliberate about our attention. And that's how we develop deep relationships also. Yes, you had a point.
Thank you. I had a realization. I just wanted to appreciate what you said about the man working on his deck, and he was working really hard and not being able to enjoy it, and how many hours of the day would he have to spend time to do that. And then it reminded me of being here in the temple and working for Krishna, and doing everything that we're doing as services to please Krishna. And I just had this image of like us all being servants and like running around after him. So I just wanted to appreciate that, because it was a really nice realization. So with regards to not having, you know, to do this for Krishna, for example, I have a friend in Florida who's listening in, and they have a question regarding your realizations on false renunciation. Maybe you could say something on that.
Sure. One response, though, to the person cleaning their house and the percentage of time he gets to stay there and so forth. And that is just that in any endeavor, there's a lot of work to set up the to set up whatever it is, and there's a lot of work taking it back down again. For instance, take cooking, for example. It takes a lot of trouble, especially if you're growing your own food, which, I mean, now we have divisions of labor. Somebody else grows our food for us generally, and we just go pick it up. But even if you have to do that, you still got to go pick it up. Then you have to prepare it. Then you have to cook it. That takes a long time. And then after the meal is served, you have to clean up. And that takes a long time too. Am I incorrect about this? In the interim, the serving and eating part, that's a fraction of the time. It's just a few minutes, like, boom, 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 thanks a lot. And you know, you don't know how hard everybody worked to grow the food, to bring it in, to cook it, and then clean up afterwards. That takes forever. The pots have to be scrubbed. Everything has to be put back. There's just a tiny, proportionately, there's a small section in between. That's how all yajnas are. If you set up a yajna, you got to go get all the stuff. Technically, you're supposed to measure it using geometry to make sure that the yajna stali is properly aligned. Otherwise, the whole thing doesn't work. Of course, Kali Yuga, you just chant Hare Krishna. But the point is that it takes a long time to set up and a long time to take down. And in the middle, you just say a few swahas and that's it. So the real kernel, what's inside what we're doing is what's important. But it takes a lot of work to set up and take down. But it's all worth it when you're doing it for yajna. When you're taking all that trouble to set up and take down, to get that one kernel in the middle, that 10 minutes of chanting Hare Krishna with full attention with everybody there, that's worth you do that one time in a lifetime, and practically you're guaranteeing your success. It's such a powerful yajna. What to speak of doing it over and over again, So it's worth the trouble when you're doing it for Krishna. But when you're not, all that same work is there, and you only get the little part in the middle, but you really don't get any credit. And that's not very good. As far as false renunciation goes, there's three paths in life. One path is a path of material enjoyment, and it doesn't work. And anybody who hasn't figured it out yet will later, after many lifetimes. It just doesn't work, because we're incompatible with the material world, and whatever we desire to get here will not satisfy us, because it's superfluous to our original nature. And then the path of renunciation is kind of an opposite path. It's one comes to a realization that the material world is cumbersome, and I'm a subtle being, and therefore I'll renounce all gross material things. And that's a reaction to being entangled materially. It's a pendulum swing called Bhogatyaga. But the path that's not artificial is the path of dedication or bhakti. When one dedicates oneself, it's very natural to dedicate oneself to service. And in service, one uses everything to serve our original divine source, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and reconnect it with Krishna to please his senses. The more knowledge one has about how one's doing service, the more refined the service becomes, the more intense it becomes. And even if one begins in a preliminary way of performing service, then the renunciation becomes effective, because we're not renouncing anything out of a misunderstanding that it's troublesome to me or belongs to me in the first place. But we're renouncing things because we can't use them in service of Krishna at that very time, therefore we set them aside and we use what we can. And that's very effective. It fits well with the way in which we interact with the world. And that means that we use our senses, we can't stop using them. So just serve Krishna with what you have. And any item can be used in the service of Krishna if one realizes that it's originally from him and it's meant to come back to him. And that's really the essential point about artificial renunciation. Do it to please Krishna and it's not artificial. What else? Yes.
Thanks, Prabhu. I've heard you say many times, where attention goes, energy flows. So I appreciated hearing that again tonight, because you were also talking about giving attention to the holy names and service and to devotees. So, repetition of a good thing is good. So I really appreciated that.
It's a mantra. Lately we've been doing programs at corporate headquarters in Silicon Valley. We go to Salesforce and to Google and now Intel. And I find that if I introduce the topic of Krishna consciousness by giving them a mantra that they can take out of the room with them, keep it in their pocket, and then explain philosophically how it relates to Krishna consciousness, or how it is beneficial to them in progressing spiritually, it's something they can keep coming back to again and again. And I found that mantra many, many years ago, and have utilized it for time management, for staying on track in my Krishna consciousness. I keep asking myself, where's my attention going? Because where attention goes, energy flows, and it's a fact. Wherever I'm putting my attention at that very time, my energy is going in that direction. So if you don't like the way you're going, just check in on your attention. And where are you putting it right now? And if it's not going towards the highest quality object of your attention, then you're not going to get the highest quality life. Or is it, we like to say also, if you don't like what you're being subjected to in life, then change the subject. Because there's a lot of things you can subject yourself to, and you subject yourself to things by tuning into them and putting your attention on them. And then you feel abused, and then you say, like, well, why do you feel abused? Because of these vibrations. Then why don't you just stop listening to them? Why don't you change the subject? And that's what bhakti is. You come in, you hear we change the subject when we come inside here. It's like this is a different subject matter altogether. And those who learn to do this throughout their life, they keep tuned in to the higher subject of Krishna consciousness, the higher vibration, keep their attention there. Then they rise. Namchayo vyabhicharina bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityaitan pramabhuyaya kalpate. Krishna says, you can rise above the three modes of material nature. That's an amazing feat. And you do it by constantly keeping your attention fixed on Krishna. Thank you. Hare Krishna. What else? Yes. Five minutes counting.
I like the point that you made that when the mind doesn't have a higher thing to focus on, that it automatically goes to material sense objects, the objects of the senses, and so that one must always keep the mind focused on the higher object in order to remain free from attachment to the sense objects. And I was thinking about that, how often we think that we need to give ourselves a mental break, and how dangerous that is. And I wanted to ask you if you could just comment on, you know, how to keep yourself continuously focused, and how dangerous it is to allow the mind to just have its own way and autopilot.
Nice questions, very practical and important. The Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna says in the Bhagavatam to Sri Uddhava that mind is a horse, or like a horse. And you have to, an expert horseman has to learn how to tame the horse. And he said sometimes the reins have to go out a little bit, and then sometimes the reins have to be pulled in a little bit. So one has to be a little expert. Sometimes those who are neophytes, they just grab the mind and they come on, you know, and just pull it. In fact, they pull their family members too. I've noticed this with family members. The husband's into it, the wife's not, or vice versa. So then the husband goes home and says, you know, we're in Krishna consciousness now, come on, you know. And then the wife goes like, no way. In fact, you know, I'm going the opposite direction. Is it kind of nature of a horse or a husband or a wife when they're grabbed and pulled in a certain direction? Living entities don't like that. They like to be whispered to, you know, like a horse whisperer. So, you know, yoga requires this kind of expertise that you have to find the ways in which, in fact, this is the commonsensical way in which the Goswamis present Krishna consciousness. They say that there's only two solid rules that you have to follow. And all the other rules serve these two. One is always remember Krishna, and the other is never forget Krishna. And all the other rules and regulations are servants to these two principles. So one has to find the ways in which to organize one's life so that one can stay in contact with the vibration of the holy name. And sometimes we may be outright discouraged because of the way that we are manhandled by our mind, despite the fact that we try as hard as we can. And in those cases, we also have to have a plan to make a comeback. And when we're at our lowest level, and not give up, but to come back and make a stand, because it all counts. And in fact, Prabhupada writes very encouragingly in the light of the Bhagavad that missteps may not be detrimental, they may become the pillars to success. I'm not at all advocating missteps, I'm just saying they're inevitable, and that they're not necessarily detrimental if one continues the process of Krishna consciousness. In fact, the Shastra says, Bhagavatam says, Supada mulam bhajata priyasya taktanya bhavasya hare priyasaha vikama yachcho patitam katanchid dhunoti sarvam priti sanivishtaha. That means that if you're practicing devotional service sincerely and somehow or other you mess up, vikama yachcho patitam katanchid, somehow or other it just comes out of nowhere and you mess up, said, what is the rectification? Keep doing devotional service, whatever way you can. And as far as recreation or resting the mind, I've seen, I was at Prashadam with some Godbrothers. It was at Govardhan, actually, at somebody's house. And, you know, we had been hearing and chanting all day, every day, for many days, and then we sat down for prasadam, it was a nice feast, and there was a devotee at the table, very enthusiastic, it was a younger devotee, and he brought up to one of my senior godbrothers, he brought up some complex philosophical question, and my godbrother said, you know, that's a little too intense for prasadam time. I really don't want to think about that. I just want to take prasadam. And so there's a way in which, you know, you can be in Krishna consciousness and just sit there with your friends and relish the fact that, look at, you know, look how lucky we are. Krishna's feeding us again. How did that happen? And look at how nice it is. It's like, just be grateful. You don't have to, like, strain your mind and, like, you know, you have to arrange your environment, says Rupa Goswami, so that you're constantly in the flow. But there are different degrees, and you need that. Yukta hara viharasya, yukta chesasya karmasu, yukta swapna bhavodasya, yoga bhavati dukaha. Krishna says, be balanced in the way you approach things. Flexible like water, and then you'll be able to survive. Gopremanande haribo! Anshakapati vishya kripasinde vichapatitanam pavani vyo vaishnavi vyo namo namaha nantapati vaishnavi.
Marman, natari armarman. Natari armarman, natari armarman, hey, natari armarman, natari armarman, natari armarman, natari armarman.